Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter 1, entitled The First Step in God Realization, Text Number 20.
Rajastamo Vyamaksita Vimudanmana Atmanaha Yachittaranaya Diro Antiyatat Kritam Malam
Rajaha, the passionate mode of nature.
Tamobhyam,
as well as by the ignorant mode of material nature.
Aksitam,
agitated.
Vimudam,
bewildered.
Manaha,
the mind.
Atmanaha,
of one's own.
Yachit,
get it rectified.
Dharanaya,
by conception of Vishnu.
Dhiraha,
the pacified.
Hanti,
destroys.
Ya,
all those.
Tatkritam,
done by them.
Malam,
dirty things. Translation. One's mind is always agitated by the passionate mode of material nature and bewildered by the ignorant mode of nature. But one can rectify such conceptions by the relation of Vishnu and thus become pacified by cleansing the dirty things created by them. Purport. Persons generally conducted by the modes of passion and ignorance cannot be bona fide candidates for being situated in the transcendental stage of God realization. Only persons conducted by the mode of goodness can have the knowledge of the Supreme Truth. Effects of the mode of passion and ignorance are manifested by too much hankering after wealth and women. And those who are too much after wealth and women can rectify their leanings only by constant remembrance of Vishnu in his potential impersonal feature. Generally, the impersonalists and monists are influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance. Such impersonalists think of themselves as liberated souls, but they have no knowledge of the transcendental personal feature of the Absolute Truth. Actually, they are impure in heart on account of being devoid of knowledge of the personal feature of the Absolute in Bhagavad Gita. It is said that after many hundreds of births, the impersonal philosopher surrenders unto the personality of Godhead. To acquire such a qualification of God realization in the personal feature, the neophyte impersonalist is given a chance to realize the relation of the Lord in everything by the philosophy of pantheism. Pantheism, in its higher status, does not permit the student to form an impersonal conception of the Absolute Truth, but it extends the conception of the Absolute Truth into the field of the so-called material energy. Everything created by the material energy can be dovetailed with the Absolute by an attitude of service, which is the essential part of living energy. The pure devotee of the Lord knows the art of converting everything into its spiritual existence by this service attitude, and only in that devotional way can the theory of pantheism be perfected. Marginal energy. Marginal energy, living being, can either be situated in the spiritual realm or can be situated in the material world. In the material world, the living being is under the influence of the three modes of material nature. When situated in the spiritual world, the natural imperfection of the living entity can be made up for by the constant association with the Supreme Lord. So only by constant devotional service and association with the Supreme Lord can the living entity be perfect. But there is no such thing as that we are by nature perfect. Only by nature we are imperfect. Yes. But by association with the Lord can we be perfect. And therefore we must always endeavor again and again for devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to be perfect. And if we are not engaging in devotional service, then we are under the modes of material nature, and especially the lower modes of material nature. Because the mode of goodness means actually that we follow the injunctions of the scriptures which are revealed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So being in the mode of goodness means actually that we are inclined towards service of the Supreme Lord and that we act according to His directions. Even if a person has some inclination towards the Absolute Truth, but yet is not fully understanding the Absolute Truth, then we understand that he is not fully in the mode of goodness, but rather that he is still influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance. Therefore, it is said in Bhagavatam, Tadarajastamo bhava kamalobadiyaschaye mateivititanvidi stittam satvaprasidati, that by the process of devotional service, one becomes firmly fixed in the mode of goodness, because one begins to rearrange his life according to the will of the Lord. And acting upon the will of the Lord is actually the mode of goodness, and eventually will bring us to the transcendental platform, to the platform of Vishuddhisattva, or purified goodness. The difference between the mode of goodness and purified goodness is that within the mode of goodness, one is still trying to fulfill his material desires, but in an authorized way. One is not just randomly following the impulses of the senses, but rather is following regulative principles to satisfy the senses. But in the purified stage, one becomes transcendental to any position in this material world. Sarva upadhi vinirmuktam tat paratvena nirmalam Rishikesa Rishikena Sevanam Bhaktir Uchate, that we are no longer identifying with the material needs and the material desires. At that stage, we say these desires belong to the material body, and the material body is actually has nothing to do with us. Why would we consider that this material body has any relevance to us, any more than a piece of stone in the street? Yeah. Nothing more. It is just material energy. And it happens to be so that we are now associating with this material energy for a while. But the nature of association with material energy is always temporary. So in one sense, a transcendentalist is not identifying with his body. He's seeing that I don't really have a relationship with it. I happen to be in it, but I don't have a permanent relationship with it. So while I'm here and associating with this particular aspect of the material energy, I'll try and engage it in the service of Krishna. And as he always does, with whatever material energy he associates. And therefore, one can be totally nirapeksha or unaffected by the material energy. So this is the stage of Visuddhisattva or Brahmabhuta. Brahmabhuta prasanatmana kaṃsatina sosati. That is the stage described in Bhagavad Gita where one is totally situated in transcendence, where one realizes Brahman or Brahmabhuta, and where one realizes that one is not the body, not just in a partial way, but fully. At such a state, one is a highly evolved personality. An example of such a personality was the sage Dadichi. At one point, some brahmana had, through a curse and a sacrifice, created a very powerful demon by the name of Vritasura. So this demon was huge, very, very, very big. Therefore, the demigods were getting concerned about a demon of that size and were interested in arranging for that demon to be killed. But there was a problem because it was said he could be killed by a weapon made of the bones of the sage Dadichi. But how to get these bones? To kill a sage was also not a good idea because that wouldn't be such good karma. Therefore, they decided, well, we can't just kill the sage.
and take his bones, because we'll get severe reactions. So they humbly went to the sage and asked him to please die and give his bones. So the sage said, all right, no problem, just let me give up this body and then you can have my bones, no problem. So here we're seeing the ultimate charity. We have seen people who gave away many things, but has anyone give away his bones? See? So that is another level of charity. Just give away your bones, right? You can think about that one. Next. So Dadichi is standing out as the most charitable person. But he was totally transcendental. Prabhupada also liked Socrates. He liked it that that statement that Socrates made when his associates asked him, where would you like that we bury your body? And so where would you like to be buried? And he said, and he didn't say the body, where would you like to be buried? And he said, well, you know, first, before you bury me, right, first you have to catch me. Right. Meaning that, how will you catch the soul? You may bury this body, but you cannot bury the soul. You cannot catch me. So Prabhupada liked it very much that he had this understanding of Aham Brahmasmi, of I am spirit. So generally speaking, we see that Socrates was condemned to death and was forced to drink poison. And yet he was not affected by that. He was allowed to wait till sunset, but he didn't even wait. He said, what's the point of prolonging this life unnecessarily? Bring it, I'll drink it now. They were going to force him to drink it anyway, so drink it. Very aloof from the bodily existence. So this is the platform of Brahma-Buddha. Nakangsati nasosati, no hankering and lamenting. But yet this platform is not the topmost platform and is not a platform that is permanent. Because by nature the living being is imperfect. And even if by some process, by some adjustment, he actually realizes that he is not matter and that he is spirit, still, because by nature he is imperfect, he will again come down, unless he makes that relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because only in the relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead can there be perfection. Which says that if one doesn't take shelter of Aravindaksha, the lotus-eyed Supreme Personality of Godhead, then patantyanadritta yusmat angrahaya, then again one will fall down to this material world. Because one will drift again to the natural position of imperfection. And again, the three modes of material nature will take over. So therefore, actual liberation exists only in devotional service. The impersonalist liberation is not true liberation, because it's not eternal. Although it may be for a long time residing in the Brahma Jyoti, ultimately that is not an eternal position. Therefore, there is actually no mukti. It is funny, because they make such a thing about liberation. It's all about liberation, liberation, liberation. They do it all for liberation. But they don't actually get liberation. They get only temporary liberation. Whereas the Vaishnavas, they get liberation, but they have no interest in liberation. Liberation comes with folded hands to our door, and the Vaishnava says, well, okay, but I'm really busy in devotional service now, so I have no time for this issue of being liberated from birth and death and material suffering, etc. I'll simply continue serving. So in this way, devotional service is the actual process. And it is said that rather than turning away from the world as illusion, and rather than turning away from the body as it being separated from us, you say, yes, it is separated from us,
and our relationship with it is temporary. But now that we are in it, let us use it to the best of our ability, and let us liberate this energy. Let us liberate this energy. This is called Hari Sambandha Vastuna. So the devotee is finding in everything the Hari Sambandha Vastu. The Hari Sambandha Vastu means that everything has its natural relationship with Krishna, somewhere, in some respect. And the devotee must uncover that natural relationship with Krishna. Whatever it is, somehow or other, we have to find that relationship it has in service to Krishna. And that is actually the purpose of anything, and that is actually the natural form of anything. In any other feature or form of any object or person which is not engaged in the service of Krishna is false and artificial. Right? It is actually a misuse of that facility. Right? And the result is that one will be denied more facility. In the perfection of yoga, Prabhupada gives an example of a mother and two children, two sons. One of the sons is a great disturbance. So finally she says to him, "Sit quiet. Just sit quiet and don't move." The other son is more helpful, so she engages him in all kinds of different services to assist her. Right? So it's that the first son is the impersonalist. So the impersonalist process is, all right, you know, just sit down and stop causing any disturbance. Hold your breath and meditate. Don't move. Which is, give up the negative activity. But devotional service is actually the positive activity. So this is our business. And that is what we have to do. Everywhere in this entire world, we have to see Krishna. One time, there was a conversation between Srila Prabhupada and Allen Ginsberg. You can read the conversation books, 37 volumes, which is certainly very nice to read. Because within these conversations, we find applied philosophy. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, we oftentimes find the philosophy and the standards of Krishna consciousness. But then in the conversations, we find of how it applies in our modern world and in our lives and so on. So Prabhupada had quite a few meetings with Allen Ginsberg, and there are quite a few conversations with Allen Ginsberg, who was, like you could say, the hippie guru in the LSD culture of America. Now Allen Ginsberg, the conversations with him are interesting because he was asking relevant questions, and at the same time he was not Prabhupada's disciple. So oftentimes when Prabhupada's disciples are asking questions in the conversations, then when Prabhupada gives an answer, then they don't ask any further. But Allen Ginsberg, he keeps on asking, right? So that is actually interesting, because we might also in our mind have such kind of questions. So in one time, Allen Ginsberg brought up the process of deity worship once again, although, you know, he was accepting the deity, etc., but still, for argument's sake, he wanted to go to the root of it all. And he brought out the point that, yes, but here is the Supreme Lord in a form of matter, but how can you ever capture the absolute transcendence, which is unlimited, into limited matter? How can you capture the unlimited in the limited? So how can spirit be ever captured in matter? Well, you know, this is there's some philosophical argument there. And Prabhupada, so Allen Ginsberg was getting ready, you know, for some sort of debate. And Prabhupada simply said, matter doesn't exist. That settled that. He said, there is no matter. That settled the whole debate. There was no more debate, because there is no matter, which is a fact. There is no matter, because all matter is also spiritual. Because parasya shakti vividaiva shruyate, Everything is the energy of Krishna. And also this energy is spiritual in origin. Krishna is the ultimate cause of all causes. And everything manifests from Him. So how can we call anything matter? Everything is spiritual rather, but it is covered. Here in this material world, the spiritual energy of Krishna is covered. Covered by the illusory energy, which makes it appear to be separate from Krishna. But as soon as one recognizes the connection with Krishna, then that illusory energy is gone. As simple as that. So this is our business. Just like the pujari, his business is to take bhoga, right? He takes some foodstuffs, it's bhoga, prepares it properly, and then offers it to Krishna. So the pujari's business is to offer to Krishna. So in one sense, we are all pujaris, right? We are all pujaris, and the whole world is the altar, and our business is simply in this world to take the things of this world, prepare them nicely, purify them, and then offer them to Krishna. And that is all. Right? And this is really the way it can be done. And anything can be used for Krishna. Even impure substances like sewage can be used to fertilize the land. So there are there's nothing in this world which does not have its application in the service of Krishna. But some things have an application in only rare cases, right? In rare cases, like nuclear bombs or something like that. In rare cases, maybe, right? Can be used in the service of Krishna. But generally speaking, not. Right? Generally speaking, we don't use such things. But nothing is really, there's no item in this world which cannot be used. Right? There's nothing in this world that cannot be used in the service of Krishna. But one must have the intelligence to understand how to use it. And some things are to be used very rarely and very, very... So those things, therefore there are many things that we don't use in the service of Krishna. And we take those things that are obvious. But a pure devotee of the Lord can see Krishna anywhere and in everything. And we see Prabhupada's brilliance in this way. Because what Prabhupada did is still considered very revolutionary. That he, one of the first things he did when he came into the West was making a record of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Right? So up to the day of today, there are people objecting against the recorded sound vibration and saying, how can this recorded sound vibration be potent? How can it count? Prabhupada also initiated devotees in the Gayatri Mantra through tape. So sometimes some criticism comes in India from outside of ISKCON, from other Vaishnavas, that this second initiation is not valid because it was done with the tape. So the actual mantra, right, mantra was not given. Right? Mantra was not given because it was only the tape. Mantra must be spoken, etc. But Prabhupada was so transcendental that he could see that, yes, this mantra is also potent. And simply said, yes, let us make a recording of the holy name. And this recording acts. Right? And we know very well that Prabhupada's tapes act. Right? We know it from practical experience that hearing the lectures gives us so much spiritual strength and energy. And hearing that kirtan is just so wonderful. Listening to Prabhupada singing different bhajans is very nice because it is totally free from pretense. Right? There is no show, there is no attempt to impress anyone. There is simply an attempt to glorify Krishna. Right? Nothing else. And it's very peaceful, right? Very relaxing. It's not at all, it's not in any way agitating the mind. Right? Totally like that. Right? This is
the wonderful potency of Prabhupada's recordings. But it was totally revolutionary, and still some people cannot accept. No, 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 that cannot be done. That cannot be done. You cannot produce the transcendental sound vibration from a machine. But Prabhupada would simply say, this is my energy. This recording is my energy, and it also works. My energy works, of course. Everyone in the world leaves his energy behind, may not be personally present, but it is there. So with the combined efforts of different people, with the combined effort of Mr. Soni and Srila Prabhupada, right, these energies can actually leave behind his transcendental chanting for us, which is amazing. It is really amazing. Because we can get the same Maha Mantra that Prabhupada chanted in the Tompkins Square Park days or in the 26 Second Avenue storefront today. And we can play it and we can get the same benefit, although we weren't there. So that's quite amazing, amazing how all this can be done and how Prabhupada had full faith in that potency was there. And this is clear because it is the potency of Vani. It is the potency of his instruction. It is the potency of sound vibration, of him being present in sound. It is said like that. The Vaishnavas never die. Rather, Vaishnavas die to live. Vaishnavas live in sound. And living try to spread the holy name around. So the Vaishnavas are living in sound. So Prabhupada took this totally literal and was really revolutionary in that way. Yeah. Rocking the boat in conservative India like anything, right? Because if India is anything, it's conservative, right? No, 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 this cannot be done. No, this is not right. No, 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 this is offensive. No, 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 stop. No, we will not have this. We saw that in Mayapur because I was a grihastha in my former ashram. Okay? And my former wife used to have a bicycle and was one of the first who had a bicycle. And the Bengali devotees could not accept, right, a Mataji on a bicycle. No, this was not to be accepted. And they would all the time let the air out of the tires. Whereas Dutch Matajis, they almost get born on a bicycle, right? There's no such thing, you know. It's like some, in Holland, everyone has wheels, you know, on a bicycle from like this high. Boys and girls, doesn't matter. So India's conservative in one sense. And when Srila Prabhupada came to the Western world and started to preach, there were some early newspaper articles, and Prabhupada in one of these new newspaper articles was described as being one of the more conservative representatives of his faith. The reason was because of the four regulative principles, and he was preaching against drugs and all that, which was just what life was all about in those days. But Prabhupada protested. Is that conservative? Conservative? No. Conservative? We are not. Right. Prabhupada certainly was not conservative. Prabhupada was very revolutionary, as we pointed out. He had full faith that recordings of the of transcendental sound vibration maintained the transcendental potency, and he used it to the max. He used all these modern facilities to the full extent immediately. In this way, Prabhupada had a very transcendental vision, and all based on this same principle which he outlined in that discussion with Allen Ginsberg, that matter does not exist, actually. If one simply sees how to engage that matter in the service of Krishna, it becomes transcendental. And it was on the strength of this that Prabhupada could adjust to the Western world and to modern times and said, all right, it can be used. Although he was not necessarily in favor of using the latest gadgets in the service of Krishna, when they had a telex, the BBT had a telex, right? That was the most advanced international communication in those days. Not computer communication, but some there was a machine and a strip of paper would come out, and on the other side they could type in text and then it would come out. Right, so Prabhupada was waiting and waiting, and it took a long time before the machine worked, and finally it worked. He was already getting impatient. Oh, this is just a waste of time. Right? It takes too long, and forget this. And then the devotees asked if they should put such telex machines in all the temples for easy communication. And Prabhupada simply said, he said, what's the good of that? They will only gossip. Right? They will only gossip. And well, this is what we... Now we have something more advanced. Now we have com, right, or email, and that's what we do. Only gossip, right? And then responding to gossip. And sometimes that gossip can take incredible proportions, right? Incredible proportions. On one occasion, I gave a class, you know, on Varna Ashram. And, well, Varna Ashram is all good and well, but it is helpful for devotional service, but it is clearly stated throughout Prabhupada's books that it's not transcendental. Right? But we have a certain group of devotees in our movement who feel that Varna Ashram, Varna Ashram, Varna Ashram is the solution to all problems. We need Varna Ashram. Right? And so I must say I'm not too fond of that kind of preaching. So on one occasion I mentioned that Varna Ashram is simply like a crutch, like some crutches. It is to help us stand up, right? When we are very fallen, we are so fallen that we cannot stand. Then we have Varna Ashram, and they are the crutches that help us stand, right? But when one is transcendental, then one doesn't actually need these Varna Ashram. Then one is even transcendental to that, right? Although one may, for the sake of preaching, still follow Varna Ashram. I had called Varna Ashram a crutch, you know. Well, next morning, I had 300 letters in my mailbox, right? I'd never seen anything like that. Quick, fast like lightning, they had already transcribed the lecture, already sent it all over the world. Already I was getting heavy letters from Romania. Romania, of all places, right? I mean, Romania. I've never been in Romania. I'll never go to Romania. Hope, at least, if not if it's up to me. I'm not particularly attracted to that place. Transylvania, the place of Dracula. All that, I said, forget it, you know. It's not my preaching field. Let others go. But letters were coming in from everywhere. Right. I decided the best thing to do is not to respond. Right. Because if you respond, you only get more letters. Right. So I thought, forget it. I'm just not going to respond. I just switch off the computer for 1 week. And then after 1 week, I looked again. And everything was quiet again. See, it all went away. So, just see. So here we live. In a world with all this modern stuff, and we see also the downfall of it. Right? We see how it can be used in the service of Krishna, and we can see how very quickly one can put out some Krishna conscious information. Prabhupada did it. He made a record of the holy name. And it became actually a top hit in many countries, even number one in some countries. So how many people bought that record? I don't know. I didn't get that record, but I got the Goddess of Fortune, right, before I joined. And we used to play it all the time. Govinda Adi Purusham. So I already knew all the songs when I came to the temple, actually. You know, I knew them all. But, didn't have to learn them. I already knew them from the record. So many people got benefited by these kind of transcendental records. And Prabhupada used them and was very open to that. But There's also the downside of all this modern facility. Maya can also be spread like anything all over the world really quick. So Prabhupada was not in favor of that. But he was not conservative. He was very liberal and flexible and ready to engage, to look at anything. Anything, can it be used? All right, let us use it. Why? But other things he didn't particularly like, he didn't see that it was going to help so much, then no, we don't need. So Prabhupada was transcendental in seeing that everything is Krishna's energy and everything can be used in the service of Krishna. Prabhupada was interested in the cities. In India, so many properties were being offered to ISKCON. Many, many properties in many holy places. There's always some ashram that is being offered, always some piece of land that is being offered again and again. But he was not interested in so many of these places. He was interested to be in the city. His spiritual master had given that instruction that we should preach in the cities, because in the cities there is life. But preaching in the cities is not such a simple thing, because living in the city is difficult. It's expensive like anything, right? And one needs lots of money, and one needs to work a lot to get all that money, just like everybody else. We see in big cities early in the morning, peak traffic, everyone's going to work. In the evening, everyone's coming back, and it's just a busy, busy life. Lots of things to do, city life. So, therefore, in this modern day, in this age of Kali, the city is for the renunciants, and the forest and the countryside is for those who are attached. It is just opposite of the Vedic times. Because if in the city one is simple and renounced, then one can live with simple means, then one is free to preach. But if we want to really live it up, then we don't belong in the city. Right? Because then we'll be busy all day making money in the city just to maintain our nice facilities. But if in the city we are ready to be simple and live very simple, then we can preach. And then we can actually be free. So it's kind of ironic how in the Vedic times the renunciants used to all stay in the forest, away from the world, and then come out to preach sometimes to the world. But in modern times, the preachers, they stay in the cities. They sometimes go to the countryside for a little rejuvenation. They use the countryside for rejuvenation. But they live simple and stay in the cities and preach. So this is actually how we can be successful. The more we see that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was preaching, and in the course of that there was one very wealthy man whose name was Jack Mohan, and later he was initiated by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta as Jagat Bandhu. Jagat Bandhu gave all his life savings for constructing a temple, and he built this beautiful temple in 2 years. He built a huge temple. He really worked very hard to make a huge project in 2 years' time. And he gave everything. And there was a beautiful temple in Bagh Bazar in Calcutta. And as soon as everyone moved in, the preaching spirit went down. The building got bigger and bigger in the city, we're talking now, right? The city temple became very big. Everyone started arguing about the rooms, and the preaching went down. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta started to impose really heavy rules on his sannyasis at that time. He said that a sannyasi cannot wear shoes, right? A sannyasi, he said, cannot call for a doctor. Right? He cannot call for a doctor when he is sick. He made these rules. And he said the sannyasi, when he is sick, he should just continue. But if he really can't get up, then he should just lie down, right? And try to and fast, right? And then when somebody comes to him and says, Maharaj, you didn't come for the last 3-4 days for prasadam, is there anything wrong? And when he could say, yes, I'm not well. And then if someone said, should we get a doctor? He said, then you can get a doctor. So he's making all these heavy rows simply because he wanted an austere spirit. A spirit where we were not so concerned with all our facilities and this and that, so that we would be free for preaching. So Prabhupada also took this spirit. Life was in a mood of simple living, right, in the cities, right, especially where the people are, to go where the action is. He also had farms, he also had country projects, and they had a purpose. They had a purpose for maybe many families were living there because it's better to bring up kids in such conditions. And as a place, as a retreat where people could come from the cities to slow down and to actually get a little bit out of the modes of passion and ignorance which are so predominant in city life, right? And get then in a peaceful atmosphere for cultivating Krishna consciousness. But especially the cities are the places for preaching. That is where we have the cutting edge of Krishna consciousness. And it's very important in Krishna consciousness that we, as this verse is about the mode of passion and ignorance and how one should become transcendental, it is very important that we must come to the mode of goodness and to transcendental platform, that we must give up the ways of ignorance and passion, that we must develop a culture of behaving according to scriptures, of prescribed Vaishnava behavior, and so on. But even if we are in the mode of goodness, as pakka sadhus and pakka brahmanas and pakka dhotis and pakka saris and pakka outfits and pakka tilak and everything, super pakka, all that will actually not do the job, right, if we are not on the cutting edge. We have to, in spiritual life, be on the cutting edge. The cutting edge of preaching. Otherwise, the material desires will be always on the horizon of our mind, which is in the mode of goodness, and tempting us again to slide down to passion and ignorance. And a little weak moment comes, and there it goes again, the mode of passion, and the whole thing starts all over, the turmoil of just where things get out of control. Right? Therefore, the secret in Krishna consciousness is to always remain on the cutting edge. And actually these cities are the opportunity for being on the cutting edge, whereas the country projects are the retreats where we can retreat to the mode of goodness. Our place of retreat is the mode of goodness. When we retreat to the mode of goodness, we can recharge, we can again situate ourselves in nice sadhachar, and then again return and go on the cutting edge. And by doing so, we get the mercy of Krishna. And this will tip the balance from the mode of goodness to the transcendental platform. And that is actually Krishna consciousness. Now, I have 2 minutes. If there's one question, I'll try. Yeah. Rupa Goswami says, Vairiki Lokiki Vapu Yat Kriya Griyate Mune Hari Sevanu Kulai Va. He says you can follow the Vine Ashram system, the Vedic system, or you can follow the non-Vedic system, the ordinary mundane system, whatever is Hari Seva Anakul, whatever is favorable for the service of the Lord. But it says, Vedesu Sarva Sukhino Bhavantu. If you follow the Vedic system, everyone will become happy. So Vine Ashram is a good thing, we want it, but we don't want to make it into a religion, you know, into our things, Vine Ashram, and Vine Ashram t-shirts, and Vine Ashram is the solution, Vine Ashram is what's lacking in ISKCON, 50% of Prabhupada's work wasn't finished, and this is our problem, we don't have Vine Ashram, and therefore, no, our problem is we don't chant Hare Krishna, and we're not preaching. That is why we're dry. Vine Ashram is simply another thing that will help us in this whole process of Prabhupada. Right. Yeah. It is a fact that we do need the mode of goodness to retreat to from the cutting edge. We cannot be on the cutting edge all the time. Huh? Yes.
Yes, I do. Authorized vacation. Prabhupada pointed out we have to go to the holy dhams, right? The country, if we have a place in the country, it should be a holy place. You know, it should not just be the country, birds and bees and cows and all that. It should be Krishna. Otherwise, what's the point of the country, right? It should be spiritual and transcendental. But we should just take the time. We cannot always just push on and preach, take over the world. There is also a time we have to retreat and take time and actually read Bhagavad Gita and actually try and chant some nice rounds, you know, and take some time for maybe chant a few extra rounds, things like that. I think that's what Prabhupada wanted when he wanted devotees to go to Vrindavan every year. I think the farms and country projects are meant to fulfill that purpose. And but the emphasis has to be on the cutting edge, not on, you know, a nice spiritual facility where I can be in the mode of goodness, very balanced, etc. Because that will ultimately become dry, and we will not, from there, we won't make it. The cutting edge is where you can earn the mercy of Krishna. Right? And it's by the mercy of Krishna that we become freed from passion and ignorance. So it works. I'm confirming, yes. I think we can turn it. Yes, you're right. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.